Welcome to AUSA's Army Matters podcast. This is Thought Leaders with Joe Craig. My guest today is Colonel Joseph Selesky, author of The Green Berets and the Land of a Million Elephants, U.S. Army Special Warfare and the Secret War in Laos, 1959 to 1974. Colonel Selesky has served for 30 years in the U.S. Army, 23 of them in Special Forces. He retired in 2004 after commanding the 3rd Special Forces Group Airborne. He served as commander of the Combined Joint Special Operations Task Force for 2 tours in Operation Enduring Freedom, and he's published several works on Special Forces and counterinsurgency. Colonel Selesky, welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate the invite.
Well, I'd like to know, first of all, what drew you to the story of the Green Berets in Laos?
When I was after retirement, I worked as a senior fellow at the Joint Special Operations University, and along with writing and research, we also pitched in to teach courses. I was working on a regular warfare course, trying to find a good example, historical example for the special ops students. And I was always intrigued by why we knew almost absolutely nothing about what we had accomplished in Laos. We had heard the words, you know, maybe a 2 or 3 page article on White Star, nothing significant on Hotfoot, and nobody, probably to this day to this book, ever heard about Project 404. So I was intrigued by that. I was going to wait until I decided to do 10 years with the Special Ops University and then wait to work on a book.
Well, now for our listeners who might not be familiar with the story, could you give us a little background on Laos and how Green Berets fit into the picture?
So after the fall of Dien Bien Phu, you know, the French are kind of kicked out of Indochina. The French are allowed to keep 3,000 military trainers in a couple bases in Laos. It was a provision of the Geneva Agreements. But the Geneva Agreements restricted any foreign forces or foreign military bases. This is in the era of Eisenhower and the theory of the fallen dominoes, you know, in that if one country falls to communism, the others do. So Eisenhower began financial assistance and military assistance to Thailand, who also had an insurgency, South Vietnam, and to Laos. We put an embassy in Vientiane, the political capital of Laos, 1955. And they begin a military assistance program administered by the U.S. Operations Mission, USOM. Because we can't have foreign troops in Laos, that place is staffed with retired military guys. A couple of years go by, and the Laotian army is not doing good against the enemy. And America's wondering, you know, what the heck are you doing with all the equipment we've been giving? And what are the French doing to train you on that equipment?
And just to remind those, who is the enemy that they're fighting?
Oh, I'm sorry. So the internal enemy after the Japanese leave and the French reoccupy Indochina is the Pathet Lao. So they're a communist-inspired movement, and they're entirely patterned on the Maoist-type guerrilla warfare insurgency.
Right.
Very predictable. Now, they are backed up by the North Vietnamese Army. Back then, it was called the Viet Minh. And they have captured weapons, or they've got weapons supplied by communist bloc countries. If you took a line and tried to bisect Laos down the middle on the right half, pretty much under communist control, pretty much throughout the war, because it's the hill tribes and it's remote. And on the left half is, you know, the friendly forces. General Heintkes does a survey and just sees a deplorable condition of the training, and the French aren't, you know, getting it through. So Washington, D.C. works with the French to say, we want to put in U.S. trainers for our equipment. There's a lot of hand-wringing, but eventually they get an agreement to send in, back then it was called a B-team, but it's really a battalion-level organization. We call a B-team, I guess to confuse everybody. He takes, there are 12 regular infantry battalions. He takes 12 SF teams, but we're limited to only 8 people instead of 12 people. And their job is to work alongside the French at 4 and then 5 of the major training centers. And what the SF guys do is they have to go in, I guess, clandestine. They get new ID cards that they're forest rangers, or they work for the embassy, or, you know, they're called Mr. and they wear civilian clothes, and they're not supposed to be armed, but like all good SF guys.
Right.
Once they get in the country, they figure out where to get weapons from to defend themselves.
So these aren't Army-issued weapons. They have to go out and
no,
get their own.
They well, when they report to the training centers, the Laotians, you know, have armories and all kind of captured equipment. It's fairly easy to get a hold of you know, rifles and pistols and submachine guns.
Now, how are the SF guys getting along with the French trainers at the time?
Yeah, that's going to be a big problem. There's a lot of animosity with the French, I guess rightly so, you know, after the fall of Indochina. And then they're all fighting a war in Algeria. We suspect them of siphoning off, you know, military arms to go to Algeria, you know, the best equipment. The training is separated. The Americans can only do individual training. They can't do crew serve weapon training, and they can't do tactical training because the French want to continue to train their doctrine, which unfortunately has nothing to do with counterinsurgency. The training is separated by time. Sometimes the Americans get to train in the morning and the French in the afternoon, or, you know, you flip it around. And the French are constantly, after the Americans train the Laotian soldiers on how to use weapons, then the French turn around and train them on how to go back to the way the French want to do it. So it's just a constant friction. The whole thing was set up for 6-month TDY tours for a year.
TDY?
Temporary duty tours. Because remember, we can't station troops in Laos.
This is kind of to hide the fact that they're actually military forces.
After a year, America wants a 9-month extension because we haven't finished the sergeants and the officers courses and the leadership courses. The French disagree, but the coup in Vientiane in the fall of 1960, America will come back to it. But America sort of enters the war with the Laotian army, puts her uniforms back on, and we kind of just basically ignore the French. And after then, the French are out of the picture.
So the part you're talking about now where the advisors are coming in, they're actually wearing American uniforms, using equipment, this is when it transforms into Operation White Star, is that correct?
The advisors who are there are told to put their uniforms back on and carry American arms. This is the transition from the third rotation to the fourth rotation. So in April, Kennedy, the new administration, they don't like the fact that the North Vietnamese are still aggressive and operating in Laos. You know, we've been putting up with this pretense because of the Geneva agreements, but if you guys are going to do it, we're going to do it. He orders 9 additional teams to go in there. He puts a military advisory assistance group in the embassy. And then again, all the special forces teams go into combat mode, you know, with all their equipment. And they go out as combat advisors. They're not trainers anymore. Mm-hmm. They are out in all 5 military regions doing combat operations.
And this is the phase where we're actually seeing the first American casualties, right?
Yeah, but let me just say one thing. So this is called Operation White Star. Nobody knows why they have that name. I suspect, you know, the white stars that were painted on Jeeps and trucks. Mm-hmm. That's the closest I've ever been able to uncover. So after April, the Pathet Lao are holding a major road junction north of Vientiane, and the Laotian army is going to try to attack it and clear it. They have one prong coming down from Luang Prabang, the royal capital. They have another prong coming up from Vientiane, and then they have a prong coming from the Plain of Jars west to the road junction. The Laotians are not that great at big maneuver and combined arms. But in a move up north of Vientiane, there's a village called Vang Vien. One of the SF teams is escorting me. It was Team Moon. We don't know his team number. We think we know it. But the teams also call their teams by their team leader's name.
Okay.
Like Team Korchek, Team Moon, Team Roy, whatever. They get ambushed. 2 sergeants, Bieber and Bischoff, are killed. There's an SF sergeant in the rear with a mortar jeep and some machine guns in the rear of the column. And he sees Captain Moon standing in the road get captured. Sergeant Ballinger jumps off and runs into the jungle. Right. They kind of pick him up later. The column retreats. They're just a little bit north of Vang Vieng. They retreat. Ballinger and Moon get taken to the Plain of Jars and go into captivity as POWs. Moon later dies trying to escape. He gets shot. We think he was wounded in the ambush, but it's hard to tell from the other Americans who were also prisoners when these Americans are like Air America crews, mm-hmm. some news people.
You mentioned Air America frequently in the book. So could you tell our listeners, you know, who they were and what their role was?
Air America, for all intents and purposes, is the proxy air force and the counterinsurgency air force for our special operations. The Air Force was prohibited from flying in Laos because of the Geneva agreements, mm-hmm. although they could conduct some reconnaissance flights. So Air America turns into the transport resupply medical evacuation. I mean, it's a CIA-owned proprietary airline, so it basically is also used with the CIA operatives and our special forces team. It truly is the lifeline because the areas are so remote.
And the soldiers seem to definitely appreciate the work that they're doing.
A couple of them rescued from some major battles. I don't think there was a dry mouth that didn't have beer in it when they met back in our hotels, you know, in appreciation.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So we had the first casualties with Team Moon there. How dangerous was it for the combat advisors?
The Laotians were pretty nervous about having Americans or Americans get killed. Again, to keep up the pretense we weren't there. So they fairly well protected them. I mean, very rarely were they on the front lines, but they're still in battles where they're, you know, under fire or under artillery or mortar fire. The interesting thing about the battles is the Laotian people, the main religion is Buddhism. Mm-hmm. The mountain tribes are animist or spirit worshipers and all that philosophy. They don't like killing other human beings. And what a lot of the American advisors were astounded by was when there was a battle, both sides are firing their rifles in the air. They're not aiming their artillery or mortars. Mm-hmm. They're just, you know, putting rounds in to go, you know, the round will land wherever Buddha wants it to land. They were very averse to killing. And one of the veterans remarked, you know, you could have a five-minute firefight, which really is a long time if you're on fire. And, you know, not seeing any casualties, maybe like a couple people wounded.
It's hard to get a conclusive result in that thing.
So I don't think there's any instances of, you know, like hand-to-hand or multi-battalion attacks. I would characterize it as skirmishes. And nobody else gets killed, you know, until we withdraw the SF in October of 1962.
And they're withdrawn because of the new agreement?
In the, I guess the summer of 1961, the Pathet Lao and the Laotian government start peace talks. And that's going to drag on and on and on. By June, or going from May going into June in 1962, they finally get an agreement. And it's called the Peace and Reconciliation Accord. Mm-hmm. And it's like the Geneva Accords. It calls for the withdrawal of all foreign forces from Laos. So the Americans are ordered to withdraw. They had, that gives them about 90 days. So they start a phase withdrawal. And by early October 62, all the Americans are gone, less the embassy, military staff.
So State Department folks are still allowed to stay.
Yeah, and so is the agency, you know, still in there covertly, you know, keeping a few operatives to keep the guerrilla warfare programs going.
A broad definition of the State Department, I suppose.
Well, you know what? I will make one comment, and I've said this to many of my friends. The State Department's run counterinsurgencies. They did it in Laos. Mm-hmm. They did it in the Philippines. They did it in Colombia. So the tally of, you know, who's best for counterinsurgency, is it the military running it, or is the State Department interagency running it? The score is pretty even.
So you had the traditional military combat advisors are pulling out in October 62. But that's not the end of the story. Well, where'd you go from there?
After the coup in Vientiane, the Laotian forces, the coup by the Captain Kong Lee, who was the second paratroop commander, there was a battle there in December 1960. SF teams participate with a loyalist, I guess you call him. They kicked him out, and he went up to the Plain of Jars, and that fifth training center up there was pushed out by NVA, Pathet Lao, and neutralists. The neutralists joined the Pathet Lao and the NVA, you know, much to the shock and horror of the Laotian government. In about 1964, there's bad blood between the Pathet Lao and the neutralists. And the neutralists go, okay, we're going to take all our toys and go back and join the Laotian government, which they do. Mm-hmm. They don't fight that well, but they break from the communist side, you know, the enemy side.
So the neutralists are a third party in this civil war, kind of playing both sides over the years.
You're going to see, at least in the book and throughout that period of history, there are three movements. You got the rightists who are pro-Western, pro-democracy. You got the neutralists, because the Geneva Accord said, you know, Laos should be a neutral country. And they're kind of nationalist, I guess. And then you got the leftists who are going to be the Pathet Lao and the Neo-Lok Hak Sat, which is the communist political party.
And they're working with the NVA, North Vietnamese Army.
Correct, but I would characterize it like this. They're a proxy for the NVA. Ho Chi Minh in the 30s drafted a plan for communism in all Indochina, the Indo-Chinese Communist Party, the ICP. And North Vietnam had historical ambitions on Laos. And I don't think the Pathet Lao did anything that, you know, wasn't controlled by the North Vietnamese.
So how do we get back, you know, the advisors back in country?
Once again, the embassy is short of staff. So we got to figure a way to circumvent the Geneva restriction. So the Joint Chiefs of Staff in 1966 create Project 404. And that is to get advisors back in country. But the secret way we do it is we attach them to the embassy. So now they're assistant attachés. So we got Army assistant attachés and we got Air Force assistant attachés. And so now we got Air Commandos and Green Berets back in country. Now Project 404 team were assigned to the commanders of the five military regions. Sometimes it's one person, sometimes it's three, sometimes it's five. This is not exclusively SF. There's also Army infantry armor, you know, and specialists in there. And their job is to be the eyes and ears of the ambassador and collect intelligence. So in a process from 1966 until they're pulled out, the last one came out in 74, Sergeant Jeff Hodacek. And he was also the longest Project 404 guy. He extended multiple tours. They also participate in the major battles that the Laotian armies conduct between those years.
And then, the one final piece of the puzzle that you cover in the book is the team over in Thailand. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, 1966, the 46th Special Forces Independent Company is formed. It's about 400 people, and it's got three companies run by a lieutenant colonel. And it's formed actually to go in and try to do some covert work, but the Thai government's, you know, a little balks at that. So what they do is their secondary mission becomes primary, and that's to assist the Thai government and its forces with its counterinsurgency program. During that period, select teams are pulled out, and along with the agency and the Thai special forces and police, border police, they establish six secret training camps. Major Frank Jacks becomes the commander. These camps are very restricted, and the rest of the 46th Company has no idea what's going on in these six secret camps. The camps are used sort of like today we talk about expanding partner capability. They are used to train Hmong, which in those days they were called Mao, Laotian troops and commandos, and what were called Thai volunteer battalions. And then all those people are shoved back into Laos to fight. And they're also used to when, you know, they get all brutalized, they come back for refit and retraining.
So they're all training in Thailand and then hopping the fence, as they say, to go fight in Laos.
Yeah, there was some rumor when I first started researching that they didn't serve in Laos. And because they were told, you know, your job's not Laos, your job's here in these six camps. But later on in the war, there were a couple teams that actually did go over to Laos. They got an agreement by the ambassadors, both from Thailand and at Laos, helped train Laotian forces at one of the major training centers north of Vientiane, and the other one was down near Savannakhet, down there in southern Laos. So, yeah, they did their part. They were inactivated in, I think, around 1972, and they were sent back into the 1st Special Forces Group on Okinawa to become their 3rd Battalion. And so that pretty much covers kind of the phases of all the activities SF were involved in.
So all in all, you're talking about roughly 15 years that the Green Berets are in there. What kind of lessons can we learn from their time in country?
Well, let me go in a big picture way here, I guess, for, you know, future military planners and strategists. If we're going to intervene somewhere or assist another country, we have to really take a look at, you know, what the culture, what the political situation is, you know, and what the intensity of the people are to want to sustain and, you know, fight the war and win it. That's, I guess, the major mistake of not understanding that in Laos. You know, at the end of the day, Laos was not the end of the world. I guess neither was, other places like Cambodia and such when we finally decided to pull out, you know, and focus back on Europe and NATO. When SF was formed, initially, they'd only send individual teams out to the geographic commanders, you know, to do some training. And so this is a tactical use of special forces. It wasn't until the Laotian War and then, of course, the war in South Vietnam that we finally saw SF units have operational utility and then strategic utility. And I'll give you three examples. And I'm paraphrasing Colin Gray, the great strategist, in his book, Explorations and Strategy. There are three of the strategic utility features of SOF that I think you can see in this book. One is buy time for diplomacy. Because this whole war in secrecy is really a dance of the State Department and diplomacy. The second is to reassure your allies. And so we do this with South Vietnam and Thailand, particularly, you know, as well as the Laotians. And the third is to prevent or forestall defeat. I think once Americans and the American advisors got out there, you know, improved capabilities and proficiencies and were actually out there on the front lines as a so-called stiffeners, that prevented the rout. The Laotian army probably was ripe for being routed about mid-1961, and that was a concern that they were just going to be a tripwire. But, you know, everybody, no major operational mistakes. Everybody served honorably. I mean, every veteran I've talked to, more than proud of their service. And it was a formative period where some of a lot of legends and heroes like Bull Simons, you know, did Sante Raid. A lot of our later sergeant majors, you know, Dick Meadows was on raid and did the Iran rescue mission.
Right.
And most of them went on to serve tours in Vietnam, you know, then later on. So just a fantastic group of people and some of the best people, quite frankly, I've ever met personally when I talk to them or sit down for breakfast with them or something, just very patriotic Americans.
Well, it's great that you're telling their story and that we have this book to give us some information about a war that most Americans don't really know about. So really appreciate you coming here and sharing it with us today.
No, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank Colonel Joseph Selesky for being our guest. Once again, his new book is The Green Berets and the Land of a Million Elephants, U.S. Army Special Warfare and the Secret War in Laos, 1959-74. To all our listeners, thanks for joining. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. Visit AUSA.org for more info. And keep it locked here for all Army Matters and for next week's episode with Soldier Today. Have a great day. a great Army day.